Welcome to the Collective Intelligence Podcast from IPG. We deliver marketing insights that help modern brands thrive. In this episode, you'll hear about the latest perspectives featured at intelligence.interpublic.com. Listen, then log on to find new opportunities for your brand to stand out.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of CI Conversations. I'm your host, Jen Sane. And today we will be talking about a really important topic, and that is diversity in clinical trials, and more specifically, IPG Health's first of its kind offering in that area. But before we dive into all of that, I want to introduce our wonderful guests. The first is Samar Bizzurro, Chief Medical Officer, IPG Health, and Julie Pilon, Chief Strategy Officer, IPG Health. Welcome to both of you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
So before we really get into the meat of the discussion, I think it would be great to kind of ground our listeners a bit. Can you tell us what diversity in clinical trials means? And I'd be happy for either one of you to kick that off.
Sure, I'll start. Diversity in clinical trials really means the intentional inclusion of diverse patient populations as trial participants. So these patients or people might be considered diverse along gender, age, race, location, disabilities, and other factors. Clinical trial sponsors may want to ensure that their trials align with disease state demographics, by gender, for example, to ensure generalizability of their results across both genders. And so they'll want to make sure that they have an equal amount of men and women. And so the key word here, though, is that it's intentional on the part of the clinical trial sponsor. And so they really have to be committed to doing that.
What have been some of the barriers for a more inclusive experience in clinical trials?
Each of the main stakeholders face barriers. So patients and people interested in clinical trials may not be near to or receiving care at a major academic center. And typically, these are the institutions that would be conducting a clinical trial. If they can access an academic center, the logistics of the clinical trial schedule can be challenging. Perhaps they're required to check in 3 times per week, and that would be a problem given the other responsibilities they have with job, family, and their life. It's also well documented that many healthcare providers may not openly discuss clinical trials with all of their patients, certainly not with minoritized patients. And if they do, it may not be framed in a culturally competent way that would really facilitate the patient's understanding. Healthcare providers themselves face barriers, right? So for those who are in fact treating minoritized patient populations or patients in distant or rural areas, they may lack the facilities or have the resources to run the clinical trials themselves. So if that is the case, they may not know where to refer the patients, and they're going to have concerns for the patient's health while trying to overcome some of those logistical barriers that I discussed before. And then the other stakeholders are the clinical trial sponsors themselves. They tend to run their trials at the large academic centers because that's where they have success. As you know, running a trial is a highly regulated process. And so you go to the places that know how to do that, right? As a sponsor, you're going to go back to that place because you have to do that in a compliant manner. You have to do it correctly. You want to get your product to market as quickly as possible with all of the due diligence to ensure that your products can connect to patients as quickly as possible. And so you go to those typical centers, and they may not have the patient population that will align with your goals for diversifying your clinical trials. So those are just a sampling of all of the different barriers that each of the main stakeholders might face as they try to diversify their clinical trials.
Okay, so we're talking about the barriers, but IPG Health now offers, you know, kind of a solution in this new offering for diversity in clinical trials. Before we talk about that, I would love for you to talk about InQ, which from what I understand is foundational to the new offering.
Absolutely. So, you know, Samar really talked about some of the barriers in clinical trials involvement. And one of them is really an intentional framework as to how to invite people to participate in clinical trials and invite diverse audiences to participate in clinical trials. And InQ, which is our inclusive quotient, is actually an approach that allows us to do just that. So InQ is a quotient that is based in social sciences. It has as its foundation the WHO, determinants of health, which we've expanded to 9 determinants of health because we really wanted to be along with the times, 2 of which are identity, right? What does identity have to do with inclusivity? Well, I know that it has a lot to do with inclusivity and feeling this sensation of belonging. Same with genetic predisposition. So these are new determinants of health that we found, our social scientists found, were very important to include in this inclusive quotient. So our inclusive quotient, our approach, is very much to understand which audiences could benefit from being in the clinical trials or could benefit from being on this brand. So we identify those audiences and we actually really use our data set to see where they converge and where they diverge. So we can really understand the insights or the epiphanies that come to us in terms of how can we actually speak to a broader, more diverse audiences in a way that they're motivated to participate in what we want them to participate in this case, the clinical trials.
Oh, that absolutely makes sense why that would be foundational to the program, which leads me obviously to my next question then. Can you talk more about now this offering of, I don't know, actually, I'd like you to tell me that this new offering about diversity in clinical trials.
Sure. It's really exciting. It's an industry first. So it's a multidisciplinary approach, first of all, and it seeks to ensure equitable representation across all the dimensions of diversity. I mean, people usually think about race first, but it's all the dimensions. So it includes gender, age, and other intersectional groups. And it draws from IPG Health's deep integrated strategy chops, our medical engagement brand, data analytics, our software intelligent, patient experience and expertise. And it's an end-to-end offering that addresses barriers, those barriers that I spoke about earlier, to inclusion across clinical outreach, recruitment, and engagement. And it includes everything from understanding those patient behaviors and predicting their health intentions, and then creating measurable engagement strategies and developing clinical trial support systems and more. And, you know, this offering came out of our Trial for Clinical Equality pro bono initiative. It came out of the fact that we were in this space for several years, raising awareness about the lack of inclusion in clinical trials. And then we had clients coming to us asking, hey, could you help us diversify our clinical trials? And that's how this initiative was born. And InQ is a really important part of that. And Julie just beautifully described what InQ is, but it really underlies our approach to understanding our audiences, our HCP audiences, our caregivers, and the patients and people who want to participate in clinical trials. We feel like we bring a depth of understanding in a very data-driven and systematic way to make sure that our clients can zero in on what the issues are per therapeutic area and get them in their clinical trials, get them in, and then have them stay there and thrive, get access to novel therapeutics. And that's essentially what the process is from end to end.
Yeah, I would say that what InQ allows us to do in this process of engagement is to create richer personas. Once we have identified the diverse audiences that are going to take place, really understand what is their journey, where can we intervene in their journeys in the way that matters to them, right? At the end of the day, we want people to see themselves in the work that we create, right? And we want all of the audiences to feel that way, this feeling of belonging. So with our data, really demographic, psychographic, et cetera, and our very great engines that are giving us real good insights in terms of how does that translate in real life? How do people talk about their condition? How do they talk about brands? How do they talk about clinical trials? It really allows us to create those beautiful personas and, you know, follow up with their journey. So we can really motivate them with messages or approaches that brings them in, make them want to have a seat at the table, and perhaps at the end, build a bigger table, right? Build much more inclusive clinical trials.
I love that. And obviously, in what you just said and what you've each touched on, you know, before in our conversation, you know, about the importance of understanding the audience and really understanding that persona, what else is truly needed to ensure diversity in clinical trials? If you could distill it down, kind of boom.
Commitment. and real understanding that inclusivity only brings more opportunity, right? So it's not only a human commitment, but it's also opportunities for growth for the individuals who are participating, but also for, you know, the companies who are taking part in inclusivity. That would be from my end. I'm sure Summer has something else that she wants to say about that.
Yeah, I completely agree with Julie. And as I mentioned in the beginning, when you asked me about the definition, clinical trial sponsors need to be intentional about ensuring diversity. So making sure that you have that broad spectrum of patients to get access to those clinical trials is imperative. It's not going to happen casually or by accident. And aligning clinical trial demographics with either the US population or whatever country population that you're thinking of, or your disease state demographics, is really going to ensure that the results and the conclusions about therapeutics are going to be generalizable to the patient population we're hoping to treat with them. Otherwise, what are we actually doing, right? And really understanding patient, caregiver, and HCP barriers beyond the superficial in a data-driven, trial-specific manner is going to be what's important. So we're not going to succeed if we're not intentional and purposeful about doing that.
Great. So, I mean, we're really talking about this really deep foundational stuff, this real deep understanding and making, you know, to use the word deep again, this deep commitment. So on the kind of on the behalf of pharma companies, what are some immediate action steps then that pharma companies can implement both in the short term and the long term to improve diversity in clinical trials?
So I think being honest about where you are today in terms of your diversity goals, and then putting a clear stake in the ground about what your short and midterm plans are to achieve those diversity goals. So what do you want your trials to look like in 18 months, in 5 years? On the pharma side, having a team who sits outside of but liaises with research and development and commercial product development teams to specifically support clinical trial diversification. We've seen some clients having that model, and that has been very successful. We've also seen clients find success in reinvesting in their clinical trial sites and looking very closely at who their clinical trial investigators are. So if you are running these trials at these large academic centers, not rotely letting anyone be a clinical trial investigator, but really ensuring and interviewing them and looking at their CVs that they are truly dedicated to enrolling diverse patients, and they're aligned with your vision, right? We've seen clients do this by personally screening and interviewing the investigators at their clinical trial sites, and this has helped them to be successful. So they know that they are getting physicians who are aligned with their goals, right? So this is one of the things that if you're a clinical trial sponsor, you can do that. They've also made sure that they are looking beyond the major academic centers to other types of hospitals and centers who may have minoritized populations, but may not be able to have the resources today in running a clinical trial. So what can you do as a clinical trial sponsor in supporting these types of hospitals and institutions to make sure that tomorrow they could run your clinical trial and allow you to have access to those patients that you want to include in your clinical trial?
I think, you know, for me, very simply is start by adding a patient population that makes sense for the clinical trial you're conducting. Just start with one and really start seeing how it goes and the type of insights that you can gather, as well as the opportunities that are coming with the inclusion. Just like, you know, if you need to start small, start by adding one audience, patient audience that is not the obvious patient audience, but that could highly benefit from being in the clinical trial and the brand that comes afterwards.
Summer, just a second ago, you had, you know, talked a bit about resources. And I imagine, you know, of course, that could be a challenge to pharma companies. So not specific to pharma companies, but in general, what are some of the challenges that you think lie ahead in clinical trials? Like I said, both in general and in the pharma space specifically.
I think some of the challenges include the fact that when there are best practices, no one shares them. And everyone's working in a silo. So we don't know what works. That's why I tried to share what some of the things successful clients have done in this space. So there are some bright spots and people are doing some great things, but no one's necessarily talking about it and sharing. And that is certainly a challenge. I think, again, a challenge could be that there are also geographic spots where people are left out. They're not living close to academic centers that are running trials. And I think in general, clinical trial sponsors don't know how to gain access to these patients or don't have an in-depth understanding about the patients that they want to have included in their trials. So those are, I think, are some of the challenges that can lie ahead. They're not insurmountable, but those are some of the things that we need to get after.
Yeah, if I could add to this, there's no real codified or formalized approaches for inclusivity that are institutionalized currently in many of the clinical trials, right? So unless, again, the commitment is to codify, institutionalize, and make this part of the whole clinical trial recruitment process, I think it becomes difficult to align and to build, again, ways into which we can motivate diverse audiences to come in. So again, codification and institutionalization is key in order to invite everybody at the table.
Got it. Thank you. So we're talking about the challenges and the barriers. What do you think is promising?
We're starting to see people doing it. That is very exciting. You know, we are engaged with clients who are actually very excited about a codified approach that they can further institutionalize, right? They're interested in really seeing it in action in real life. And we are very successful in basically implementing this approach so they can have more diverse clinical trials.
Yes, it's been something that's born out of the work we did on, you know, with our pro bono campaign, but it has led to clients, clinical trial sponsors in both the academic and the pharma side reaching out to us, asking if we can help support their diversification efforts. So we do know that people are interested and so that is very encouraging to see that people want to do this and want to diversify their clinical trials.
So we're kind of winding down our time together, which is amazing. It's gone so quickly. This has been such a great conversation. So you've really talked about these real consequences to human lives. What's the consequence to our work in promotional advertising to kind of bring it home?
Yeah, well, everybody is missing out, right? It's very hard to promote to audiences who have not been included in clinical trials. So not only from a human perspective, we need to continue to do the right thing. But from a business perspective, you know, expanding, like I said, the people we're speaking to, allowing for this feeling of belonging from an expanded audience is also incredibly important for brand success. So if we do not include people from the get-go, we are making it very, very hard to speak to them in a way that connects with them and in the way that they feel can actually motivate them to take the next step with us, with our brands.
Absolutely. So it's not only wrong to exclude people from the innovation that a clinical trial can offer. People should be able to see themselves in the work that we produce. And we can't put them in that work if we didn't include them in the trial, right? We work in a very regulated space and there needs to be alignment with who we had in our clinical studies and who we can promote to. And this is one of the consequences to our work, that if we did not include them in the clinical studies, there needs to be layers and layers of escalation on our part with our client, medical, and legal review teams to get the people who we want to reach out to and promote to be included in our work. And it doesn't have to be that way, right? We can include them from the beginning. So it has a significant consequence to our work. And it's even more tragic when we're dealing with a disease state that over-indexes on a high incidence and mortality rate of a minority population, and then they weren't included in the clinical trial. So we're coming in expecting to be able to promote and speak to and build these hard-hitting and moving creative campaigns to reach this population, but we now have to go through layers of escalation because they were not included in the clinical trial.
Let's face it, as a human being, when we feel included, we're way more likely to want to feel involved right? So I think, like, you know, if I were to summarize those beautiful thoughts from summer, that's how I would summarize them, because it's not just a clinical trial issue. It's basically a human issue. And we are in the business of moving humans, right? Changing behaviors. So inclusions is a really, really good way to do this and to everybody to benefit from it.
Awesome. Well, that is a perfect note to end on. Thank you both so much for being here and taking the time to have this really important conversation. So much appreciated. And thank you so much to all of our listeners. Of course, this podcast is available on your favorite player and also available on intelligence.interpublic.com, along with a trove of other thought leadership and forward thinking from the Interpublic Network. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Collective Intelligence Podcast. For more marketing insights and ideas, please subscribe to this podcast or visit intelligence.interpublic.com.